In the meantime, the work of Bill Burkett continues. You hire private investigators yourself. You manage to get Bill Burkett disbarred.
Well, he did it himself. We didn't set out in that hurry to disbar him. We set out to gain access to Dorothy Pike to take a deposition to prove that the federal government was secreting her because she would have blown their case because they were hoping that she'd testify against me, but in truth, in fact, she never would and had no such evidence. But Burkett himself caused his disbarment. When Judge Chandler asked him if he had any knowledge about where Dorothy Pike was, he made a statement that Judge Chandler considered a falsehood. I did too. I made a big mistake. When he was disbarred, I should have gone to the local county attorney and demanded that a perjury charge be filed against him, or I should have circulated a grand jury petition and called a state grand jury to investigate him.
Then you were called to testify before the grand jury.
Yes.
What did that feel like as a governor to walk into the courthouse in Oklahoma City for your appearance?
Unbelievable. You got to remember, I've been a prosecutor, handled grand juries all my prosecutorial time, and now I'm a target. I'm asked to come before these 28 men and women, and I'm going to be questioned by my nemesis, who, in my experience, I knew could control not only the questioning, but could shade anything that I said.
Bill Burkett.
So I came into the room. I was prepared before I ever came in that I would not testify before that group because I felt like there was no opportunity to tell my side of the story. It would be twisted. So I decided that I would take the Fifth Amendment, and I so did after I stated my name, and that was it. That's all I ever said was that, and I refused to testify on my grounds of the Fifth Amendment.
So how long were you in the room?
Probably less than 3 minutes.
What is the room like?
It looks like a law school classroom. It's a tiered room with maybe 6 or 8 seats on the first row, second row, third row, fourth row. The hate within that room was almost oppressive. I could feel these people just thinking, I've got to get this guy. And again, they're not bad people. Not that at all. And there's no big conspiracy on their part. But they had been brainwashed so much by what they had heard without ever hearing anything on the other side because the FBI didn't go for any exculpatory thing. They went for things that would try to show that I was guilty of something. And I knew that they were hoping to vent their anger on me. And I was not about to let Burkett use that as a tool to indict me. So I refused to answer any questions. Then I walked out the door, and I was asked about it, and I made a mistake. I should have told the press as I walked out the door that I had taken the Fifth and why I took it. Instead, I just had no comment on that, and they immediately published a story. The Daily Oklahoma must have had the headline set up ahead of time that I had taken the Fifth. I'm convinced that there was some sort of a signal arranged that the press would know without a doubt that I had taken the Fifth Amendment. I don't have any idea what it is, and maybe I'm wrong about that.
In the meantime, how is your family handling all this?
Can you imagine going to school? My daughter, 8 years old, my other daughter, 11, my son, 12, 13, and reading this. It was horrible.
What are their names?
Well, my oldest child is Nancy Lee Hall, Zumwalt. She's divorced now. Second child, Douglas David Hall, who is married with 2 children in Houston in the software business. And my youngest daughter, Julie Beth Hall Sexton, who is married to a professor at Pepperdine and who is the youth and family church director at Westminster Presbyterian Church in Westlake Village. She lives in Agoura, about 10 miles from there.
Then after the grand jury, there's this plan to move the Oklahoma Teachers Retirement Fund from First National Bank of Oklahoma City.
And that had been in process for some time. The people from Dallas, Mr. Taylor and his staff, had approached me about it, and I found that I could have that fund guaranteed by the Small Business Administration for approximately an 8% return, which was almost twice what the First National Bank and the other bank, Liberty National Bank, were paying the state on that fund. But Rogers, who was the chairman...
And he was the Secretary of State.
He was Secretary of State, but constitutionally was the chairman of the Teachers Retirement Board. I appointed the other 5 members, but Rogers was the chairman and could set the agenda. So Rogers went to Burkett and told him that in December... Now, this is just 30 days before I'm about to go out of office, that I approached him and offered him a bribe if he would vote to place these funds in this plan that we had to get the guaranteed income and to actually, I thought, make money for the state. To Burkett, it was manna from heaven. He had not been able to get a IRS indictment for almost 4 years. So he heard what Rogers had to say, and Derryberry took Rogers to see the U.S. attorney.
Larry Derryberry, who was
the
attorney general
for Oklahoma. and who was planning to run for governor that next spring himself. So they took Rogers' spurious allegation as it was, but Burkett had this problem. If he took Rogers' word and attempted to prosecute me, and it turned out that Rogers was lying, he had to have credible deniability that he wasn't involved in it. So it took him almost 19 days before he would issue a letter to Rogers saying that Rogers would not be prosecuted if he told him what he knew on the record before a grand jury. That 19 days was the time that was critical in Burkett's thinking, because he thought he had upturned every stone he could to see if Rogers was telling the truth, not telling the truth, or what. And it boiled down to Rogers' word against mine. What Burkett never told in the trial was that Rogers was under investigation for impeachment at the time, and Burkett knew that Rogers and his father were being investigated by the IRS for income tax evasion, and were very near to the time that they would be subject to a federal grand jury also. So Rogers secured a letter of immunity from Burkett. Then 3 days after I left office, I was indicted myself by the grand jury, and a trial was set for March of 1975.
John Rogers wore a wire to record conversations with you.
I don't know how many, 16 or 17 conversations. But, John, there was no smoking gun. I never said to Rogers anything about a bribe, ever. There was one exculpatory tape in which the most exculpatory statements, 3.5 minutes, were erased. Rogers said that his child bumped the tape recorder, that he had it on the phone that night, it wasn't on his body, and that we were talking on a telephone conversation, and we were never able to validate that that tape had been erased. Jack Anderson, in his investigation, released a story stating all the errors and all the transcripts of the tapes that had been made prior to the trial.
Jack Anderson had a syndicated column, The Washington Merry-Go-Round.
Right.
And he published.
Of the press, he was my most dedicated champion. I didn't know Anderson at all. I'd never met him, and he wrote these articles in defense of our position.
Well, he had also confirmed in the early 70s that U.S. attorneys appointed by Nixon began investigating city governors, so he knew you were,
yes,
a target of them. So then, January 17th of 75, the grand jury indictment was returned and arrest warrants were issued for W.W. Taylor. Why was he in on this?
He was the vehicle or the financing company that would handle the transaction that was guaranteed by the Small Business Administration. And Kevin Mooney was a surrogate of his who was working as an agent for him to try and put the deal together, because Mooney had been a friend of mine, a very good friend, in law school at Tulsa.
It was federal racketeering and extortion charges.
Correct, bribery and extortion.
In a conspiracy involving you, Secretary of State John Rogers, willfully steering state of Oklahoma employee retiree funds to investment funds controlled by Dallas, Texas businessman W.W. Doc Taylor. That's what they said then that you had done. You had offered Rogers a bribe, money. Did they ever say how much it was?
Oh, yeah, $50,000. And there is a check that was cut by Taylor in that amount that Mooney was to deliver to Rogers. Nothing that I'd ever seen, nothing I had anything to do with, but I'm certain this is what happened. I'm certain that Rogers and Mooney conspired together to do this, with Rogers receiving the payment from Mooney, with the understanding that if they ever got caught, they would say that I was the one that had offered the bribe in the first place.